No man is more professional than I. I am a 1% man. I am not above or below any man. I'm training my mind. I'm building my body. I'm connecting to my soul. I'm investing my money. Welcome to the 1% Man Podcast. Let's go, go, go.
Welcome back to the 1% Man Podcast. Got my good friend here with me, the real Freeway Rick Ross. What's up, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You've already dropped so many jewels before, and I'm glad that you told me. Every time someone comes on, I'm gonna hit record right away, so that way I don't miss on.
Absolutely. You can always edit.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
So, you know, anything that you don't like, you can get rid of it.
True. You know what? I appreciate that, because I think sometimes I forget like the little things. You know what I'm saying? I was focused on the big stuff.
Well, the little stuff sometimes is the most important, because without it being little, you know, you can't get big. You know, a lot of people can't handle. And that's one of the problems that we have as Black people with money, is that we don't believe that we should do anything with the little money that we have. We're going to wait on the big money to come.
always. Now, before we dive deep, I want to ask you three questions so myself, the listeners and viewers can get to know you better. Question number one, if you could speak to your 18-year-old self, what is one piece of advice you would give him?
You're a genius.
Why that?
Act like it.
Okay.
We really are, because every human being on the planet is special in some way or some form. You know, there's nobody that knows everything about everything. You know, we all have our weaknesses and we all have our brilliance. Your job as a human being is to find your brilliance and exploit that. You know, a lot of times what we do is we hype on what we don't have and what we're not, instead of what we are and what we could be.
Man, you know, I wish I could tell my 18-year-old self that too, because there's a lot of times, even growing up myself, I always felt like I didn't fit in, because, you know, I went back home to Africa, lived there for about 2 years, came back, and I didn't have the distinction between white and Black. So when I was growing up, all my like my biggest almost like you, when you saw Superfly and you were like, yo, I want to be like this dude. You know what I mean?
Because that's
what you idolize. I idolized 50 Cent. I was like, yo, I want to be like 50, because that's what I thought being Black was. I didn't know anything else. You know what I mean? I didn't see anything else in terms of like success and stuff like that. So yeah, I wish I would have known. I could have probably charted my own path.
Well, guess I'm gonna up you one.
Yeah.
I tell myself right now that.
Really?
Absolutely.
Every single day.
You're great. Act like it. Mm. And when you act like it, you start to live like it. And when you live like it, nobody can tell.
Yeah, I like that. That's real.
People don't know. They don't know if I'm rich or poor.
Mm.
Because I act the same way that I used to act when I made $3 million a day.
Yeah.
So you can't tell by me by the clothes that I wear, because I found out that Gucci and Versace don't make me. And Nike. And you see what I got on?
Yeah.
I got on the Freeway hoodie.
Yep.
You know, when you see me, people say, why you wear that shirt all the time? I say, because this shirt pay me. Nike don't pay me.
Mm.
So I don't feel that I should be wearing Nike. Unless I had to. You know, sometimes you got to wear their tennis shoes, because it's hard to get tennis shoes. You know, I ain't got my own tennis shoe yet.
Okay. But that's coming, though.
That's coming. Absolutely. You know, first I'm going to show, you know, because I work with a couple athletes and, you know, they let me down. You know, they should be trialing my greatness, you know, what I did for them and how I taught them how to avoid brick walls, you know, not to keep running to that same wall. Like, that wall ain't going to move, motherfucker. You keep running into that same wall. You keep going that same direction and you see keep bouncing off. It ain't changed. And yeah, it's not going to change unless you change it. Maybe if you go and cut a door in it, you know, you might be good. But if you don't put a door in that wall, you're not going to get through it. So sure. I've helped a lot of people understand that. But what they do is they try to hog the greatness all to themselves. And that's one of the problems that we have with our Black entertainers and our athletes is that they think that the spotlight should only be shining on one person. And, you know, my philosophy is that the light should shine on as many people as can get under the light.
You know, I always wanted to ask you this question. I know I'm supposed to ask you these three questions, but I want to ask you this question. I really want to get into it, is that, you know, and I love that you went into, you know, being a Black man and also being an entertainer, is that how do you every single day, knowing that at the peak, but when you were back then, when you were dealing drugs and you were the top of the, like, creme of the crop, the top person, right? I remember on the documentary said Magic made $1 million, but you saw $1 million sitting on your table and you were just like, oh, that's not really a lot of money. But
I made that every day.
You made it every day. And then after that.
And I didn't have anybody with a screwdriver in my back.
Man.
I didn't have to shoot a basketball. I didn't have to catch. I didn't have to run. You know, I could do whatever I wanted to do.
Now, coming from there, right? Like, I'm talking about you at the mountaintop. And you now, and you worked with the U.S. government. And you saw all that.
No, I never worked with the U.S. government.
Oh, okay. But you were
unknowingly, my drug supplier was a CIA operative.
Okay.
Meaning that he was a foreigner, and he worked with the government. But that I didn't get the same coverage that he had, per se.
Got you.
He had a contract with the government. I did.
You didn't have the contract.
Nor did I know that he was a government operative.
So my question is, how do you wake up every single day knowing what the government did to you and everybody else? How do you keep yourself in a state of like, you know what? I'm still going to go out here. I'm still going to be successful. I'm still going to crush it.
I'm a forward thinker. If I drop a glass of milk on the floor, mm-hmm. what I'm going to do is mop the milk up and get the glass up so nobody cuts their foot. And then I'm moving on. So what the government did had happened. Now it's my job to take what I have today to make tomorrow a better place and to make sure that we don't spill no more milk on the floor and drop no more glass. So I moved on, you know, and I told myself that if I could do that, then what else could I do with myself and with my life?
Yeah, man. It's like, I kind of like, not saying I kind of hard to believe, but like, did you go through a period where you had to, were you always a forward thinker, or did you go through a period where you were just kind of like depressed or in a period or state?
What I found out is that I've always really been a forward thinker. But I didn't know what to think because I had allowed my environment to literally control my thinking. You know, I thought because I was in a box that I should think like everybody else in the box and I should do what everybody in the box was doing. It took me going to prison and reading over 300 books to find out that, oh, no, you don't have to go along with the herd. You don't have to follow the herd. You can be the leader of the herd. Because if 1,000 people are going in the wrong direction, guess what? It doesn't change. It's still the wrong direction. It's because 1,000 people are doing it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, that definitely does make sense. I think something even like for myself, I learned that if I followed Black culture, a lot of times I have to go against Black culture to get to where I need to go in my goals and be successful. Right. There's some things that I had to do contrary to what the culture or what is naturally Black people should be doing just because there's some things that I just couldn't do.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I totally agree. And then you got to look at like, is it really Black culture? You know, because this culture is being dictated by people who are not Black. Mm. You know, when you hear a Jay-Z record, that's not really a Jay-Z record.
Really?
Somebody else owns that record.
So
does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, that does make sense to me because somebody else is actually building all that. But could you explain that? Because that may make sense to me. But
well, look at it like this here. Yeah. If we do a record, mm-hmm. right? We do a record and I get a quarter off the record, but you get $8. Who really owns that record?
I do.
Exactly. And that's the case with Black music right now. You know, we got guys and yeah, you know, but they did that in the Tuskegee experiment as well. You remember when they did the Tuskegee experiment? They bought all those guys that was in that experiment, Cadillacs.
Oh, shoot. No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they bought them all Cadillacs. You know why they bought them Cadillacs?
Why?
Because they knew they could go in the neighborhood and if they drove a brand new Cadillac, all the girls would like them.
Man.
So that means they could have sex with more women and get more of the finer things in life. Because when you pull up in a brand new Cadillac back then, you was the shit. Just like if you pull up in a Bentley right now, even though you may not own the Bentley.
But it's the projection.
It's the perception.
Yeah.
See, with my stuff, I owned it. You know, I took $125. I went out on the streets and I turned that $125 into $3 million and nobody could tell me nothing. Nobody could tell me how much of that money I could spend, when I could spend it. You know, these guys can't even put out records when they get ready. Mm. They have to wait for scheduling. So, you know, when you look at the whole perception of this culture that we adopt as ours, and we've adopted a lot of stuff as being ours that it wasn't really ours. You take a baby, for instance, and you lock them up in a closet and you have to think about when will that baby stop using the bathroom on themselves? Only when somebody teach them that they're not supposed to do that. So everything that we know in this country, we've been taught by other people. There's very few things that we came up with on our own. See, I wasn't born a drug dealer. I used to think that I was born to be a drug dealer, but I understand now that drug dealing was taught to me. See, I remember a day that I knew absolutely nothing about cocaine. I never smoked a joint. I never took a drink of a beer. See, I just wanted to be a tennis player.
True.
Well, I really just wanted to be great at something. It didn't matter what it was. You know, I understood what poverty was. I understood what having holes in your floor. And, you know, when you look up on the kitchen cabinet, the sink been dripping so long that it wore the floor out in the kitchen. And, you know, rats and roaches would just come in the house whenever they got ready. And I didn't like that. And I wanted anything that would get me and my family out of that situation. So if it meant selling drugs, you know, at that time, almost anything, stealing cars.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, what do you believe is one value all men should adopt to make it a better place for everyone?
Become critical thinkers, because when you can critically think, and not only will you think of the situation from your point of view, but you will look at it from the next person's point of view. And that's why I'm such a threat to the system, is because I can not only see the position of the other person, and that allows me to cut whatever type of deal that I want to cut, because I understand their position. I can sit there. You know, one of the things that people tell me about myself is that I'm a great listener. When I go to the meetings with these big wigs, you know, I hardly talk, because I've learned that the one who speaks first loses. So I try to speak as least as possible and listen as intentionally as I can. And then I make my decision. I make my move. You know, it's like a cat. You know, when the cat in the jungle hunting, he creeps and he watches and he stares and he listens. And then once he see that the prey makes a mistake, he jumps on it. Well, that's the way I do business. And I look at everything as business, including my kids. You know, I got two babies that I'm teaching tennis right now. And I treat them the same way, you know, with everything I do with them. You know, they say I only talk about two things, and that's them and my business.
So would because a lot of people would say that, hey, if you treat everything like business, then you see everything as like almost like a financial statement, right? Or as a dollar sign. What do you say to that? Or and could you explain your position on like
say that okay, again? Hey, say that again.
Because most people would say, hey, I see it like if you see everything as business, then we're thinking automatically dollar signs, or hey, I'm thinking about money too much, right?
No, business is not that? Business is okay. Not dollar signs. You know, the dollars are just the trophy that you get from doing a job well. You know, you look at guys like Jeff Bezos, he cares nothing about money, really. You know, money has no real value to him. It's just the trophies that he constantly collects from doing his job well. You know, it's like a tennis player, when they go out and play tennis, you know, you get a trophy. Or a football player, you get the Heisman Trophy, you know, which is the greatest award almost that you can get in college football. Mm. It's not the money, but it's the value of having that trophy. You know, knowing that you went out and you performed at a high level. And that's what a lot of us don't do. We don't perform at our level because there's no money there. See, I'm performing right now, not for money, just to perform. Yeah. And I know that the money's going to come. Mm-hmm. You know, my man, Les Brown, he's one of the ones that said it the best. I studied Les Brown when I was in jail as well. I used to watch the videos of these great motivational speakers. And Les Brown talked about this bamboo tree that you plant the seed, and you have to water it and fertilize it every day. And for 5 years, nothing happens. The tree makes absolutely no progress. But then one day it pops out the ground and it grows 20 feet high in one day. So you say, did this tree just grow that 5 years it started to grow, or did it start the day that he first put it in the ground? Nobody really knows. But we do know that if you ever stop watering and fertilizing it, it's never going to pop out the ground.
Yeah. That's the perfect example for podcasting. Podcasting, like the first year that you do it, you're really just digging the foundation. And then the year two, it's like you're watering it. You're reaching out to people. You're trying to get, you know, better and, you know, bigger guests on and stuff like that. But the day you stop like actually releasing episodes and actually reaching out to people and doing the work, it's your podcast will never grow. And I'm the same thing with like business, life or in general, anything else like that. So tell me like now, what do you feel like is like your purpose in terms of like daily living? You know, like what do you feel like? Hey, what do you feel like you're designed to do now? I know you said, you know, before you believe you were designed to be a drug dealer, that was your environment. But now what do you feel like you're designed to do, and what are you designed to put out there?
Well, one of the things when I was in prison and I was looking out this little window, you know, I was only about 18 stories up, and I was looking out this little window about six inches wide and about 4 feet tall. And I was looking out at the world, and I was like, what you going to take back out there to the world? You got a date now. You're going home. You're going to be a free man. What are you going to take back to them? You thought you was doing good when you were selling dope and you poisoned them. Now, how do you make sure that you don't make the same mistake that you made that time? And what I thought about is that I knew economics. probably better than anybody alive. And I said, you know what? Take economics to your people. Your people need economics. They don't need to not be criminals because they're not really criminals. They pick up criminality trying to accomplish economics. And they believe that criminality is an economical vehicle, which is really not. But with their natacity, the way I look at it, you know, you take a guy like myself.
Yeah.
I was willing to die to sell drugs. I was willing to kill to sell drugs. I even put my family life on the line to sell drugs. Because what I realized when I went to prison, that I knew people, that somebody went into the house and killed everybody there over drugs and money. And I knew that when I was on the street. You know, I had my mom's house was fortified with bars, and, you know, the whole night. And when I asked myself, why would you do that to the house? That was the protector. And the reason she needed protecting was because of the field that I was in. I was in a field that they would do that to your people. You know, if you worked at the toilet tissue company, they don't do that. They don't need bars all on their <window. laughs> You understand? You don't need to carry a gun.
Yeah.
But when you're in that line of work, then you need that. So I realized that I had put all of our lives on the line and our freedom on the line to accomplish those goals. And then I look at all these other young men out here who sell drugs. And I say, they just like you. They're willing to sacrifice everything. And then I looked at Bill Gates, and he was going through this antitrust lawsuit. Because, you know, I used to read the Wall Street Journal every day and USA Today. And, you know, the people be thinking that you just get in magazines like this here by luck. You know, I'm the keynote story in this. You see what it says? The crack king is back. Yeah. And they thinking that you just get in magazines like that just by luck. No, these magazines don't take no anybody. It's hard to get in those magazines. I can't get back in there. Hey, my story killed. They said my story, the editor said, when the story hit, they said that's one of the biggest stories they ever did. And they still won't take me back. And saying that, though, is that I purposely work to get those type of interviews. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to go out and do them. They're going to do it again. They're going to do another story on me.
Yeah.
They just don't know when.
Exactly.
Because I'm going to make sure they do. I mean, they're going to have to. You know, the crack king is now the king of marijuana. You know, I can see that story written already. The crack king is now the king of boxing. The crack king, biggest movie ever to come out in theaters.
Yeah.
You know, who not going to write those stories? Even though they don't hate it, you know, they're I don't want to write about this guy. You know, they like those stories. He was selling crack and now he has a life sentence without the possibility of parole. The streets are cleaner now. You know, those are the kind of stories they like to write about black men. They don't want to write no good story or they'll write about one of those guys that, you know, that the white man has the screwdriver in his back, you know, and turning and twisting. But, you know, when you don't have that screwdriver in your back, then they look at you different. And I understand that, you know, I met with the four biggest TV producers and movie producers in the world 1 week out of prison. You know, I had to walk out on them though. They thought I was a tap dancer. I said, oh no, I don't tap dance. No, I don't rap. Well, what you doing? What you doing here? How did you get in my office? I said, oh, you don't know how I got in your office? I didn't ask to come here, you know, because I already had my plan laid out when I was in prison. I laid my plan out. You know, I understand that I took $125 and turned it into $3 million a day. And I know exactly how I did it. I know exactly the steps. See, everybody else don't know how I did it. They ain't took the time to study.
Do you think what you did there with that $120, can anybody do that same thing in any business?
Oh, absolutely. Any kid can do it. That's why I started the Millionaires Club, because I want to show the world that any dummy like me, because I was a dummy. I couldn't read. I couldn't write. Couldn't graduate from high. How many kids done graduated from high school? I couldn't graduate from high school. I couldn't do it. I tried. I wanted to. I couldn't do it. But what I found out when I went to prison is the reason I couldn't do it is because I never tried. High school was not important to me. Reading a book was not important to me. It only became important to me when they told me that the only way I could get out of prison was through the law library. Oh, to go home to my kids and my grandkids? I got to learn how to read a book? Give me that book. Show me how to sound out these words. Teach me. You know, one of my friends called me the other day and he said something really important to me and it really stuck to me. He said that I can tell you how to do it. I can show you how to do it, but I can't make you comprehend it. Make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's true. Comprehension, that's key. It doesn't matter what no matter what you're doing. If you can't comprehend,
I go all I go all over the country and I be telling these people. That's why I do all these interviews. I don't do these interviews for me, nor you. I do these for the people because I hope somebody will see it and say, man, I understand what he's saying. And some they do. Well, I get people all the time come up to me and say, man, you changed my life. Black kids, white kids, they don't care. Because it ain't the color of your skin, it's the mentality that you got. You know, if you got that mentality that I'm better than you just because of my color of my skin or because my daddy was rich or my mama was rich, then you fucked up. Because their accomplishments are not your accomplishments. Yeah. And that's what I tell my kids. My accomplishments are not yours. You're not privileged. You got to go out here and do something for yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, hey, I know our time is cutting short. So I want to ask you this before we go is, could you share like the top, maybe like three or what's the top thing that you believe that what you learned in the crack business that can translate over for the modern man to use in his life to improve himself?
Like everything. Most important though is relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I treated, even though my customers were crackheads, I still treated them as if they were great. And that's why if they see me right now, they want to give me the biggest hug. And you know, sometimes I'll be like, oh, man, you took a shower in how long? Yeah, but you have to treat everybody as special because we all are special. When I look at human beings, I look at one of the greatest creations ever. And I don't care what state you're in because I understand that with 1 second, that crackhead could say, you know what, I ain't never smoking crack again. And right that second, his whole life just changed because it happened with me. I went from being a no reader to a reader. My man said, there's no difference between the guy who won't read and the guy that can't read. What's the difference?
What is the difference?
None. They both in the same boat when it comes to reading. One is not going to read no matter what you do. He's not going to read. And the other one can't read. Mm. So there's no difference. Neither one's going to get the book read.
Exactly.
Hey, I want you to do an interview with my boxers, man.
Yeah. No, for real, let's make it happen. I'll interview all of them.
Okay, we're going to set that up. We're going to set that up so they can come on and talk to you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down with that. So,
shoot. All right. I'm going to tell Echo to set it up.
Okay.
Thank you for this interview, too. I enjoyed you.
Me, too. I enjoyed it, too. So,
you got some new stuff. You got some new stuff out of me.
Definitely did. But I'm going to bring you back on, though, again.
Yeah, don't do like Joe Rogan did and blow up and then don't bring me back.
Oh, no. I already talked with Echo. I already told him, hey, I got to bring him back again. Cause you know, I got a couple of things I want you to promote anyway. So especially one of the podcasts and then I got some other stuff. So,
but all right, done deal.
Yeah. Now, hey, before you go, just leave us with just one word or a word of a day or something like that before we go.
I done gave you all them jewels. I can't think of nothing else. I'm back.
Well, how do you want to be remembered? You know, once everything's all said and done, how do you want to be remembered?
Well, you know, I think I started my life from the beginning for the end. That's why people love me like they do right now. That's why I can't walk down the street. And they want to hug me, take pictures with me. And I'd be like, I sold crack. You like the crack dealer? And they still love me. I sold crack with some of their mamas and their daddies and their brothers and their sisters. But they still like, yeah, but that was nothing. We forgive you. Let them figure that out. So when I look at my life, I really started my life the way I wanted it to end, where the people love me.
True. I appreciate it, boy.
Later.
Appreciate it. Later.
All right, later.
Thank you, my friend, for tuning into today's episode. This means so much to us over here at the 1% Man community. Now, we want to extend a hand of gratitude to you. So I have a free gift for you. All you have to do is go to www.the1percentman.com/podcast gift. This is an exclusive gift for listeners that tune into our podcast. So go over there, get that free gift as well. And now I have two simple acts of you. One, hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment and a 5-star review because that helps us to see what you love about the podcast and that helps us to bolster up in the rankings so more people can find us and listen to this pertinent information that we have for men of today's age. Last but not least, I want you to go back and listen to this podcast. Find just one thing that you can implement in your life today so you can move forward. Remember, progress over perfection. And till next time, my friend, your legacy starts today.